Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to the Elephant in the Room here on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. I hope all of you out there had a wonderful and safe 4th of July Independence Day holiday. We're able to spend some time with your family, and we're able to get some much needed downtime there. But I can tell you that buckle up, folks, because we are ready and have a great show for you today. As usual, in studio, I'm joined by my trusty executive director, John Schnader, and our producer, dazzling dandy, Daryl Grandy.
Good afternoon, Sam.
Good afternoon, folks. And then also, I'm very excited because on the phone today, we have one of the most informed and knowledgeable persons in regards to politics here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, as well as someone able to weigh in on national issues, Guy Sciarocchi, a good friend of the show. And Guy is a senior fellow with the Commonwealth Foundation, a columnist for Broad and Liberty and Real Clear PA, where he focuses on the politics of the suburbs. And he's been a frequent radio guest here, not just here, but across Pennsylvania and greater Philadelphia with Chris Steigel, Rich Zeoli, Dom Giordano, Don Stensland, and others. So we're very excited to have him here. Guy, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me back, Sam. I enjoy it, and your listeners will be happy to know that part of my family's tradition for Independence Day is to celebrate in Ocean City, New Jersey, and a large part of the contingent that we celebrate with is our extended family from Allegheny County. A whole bunch of folks from South Hills are going to be with us. So that is part of it, part of our holiday, but also part of my wife's family's long, long connections to folks in your listening area. So a shout out to them and hello to everybody in the Czarnecki and the Jaremski clan.
Well, we're happy to have you, and we're happy, Guy, that you're connected here. And that's what makes the commentary that you're able to provide so much more valuable, because you really do have a sense of things from a statewide perspective and not just from, one corner. So that's why I'm excited to have you. And, when we talk about excitement, who can't be excited about what's happening on the national stage here with the fallout from last Thursday's debate? I mean, folks like yourself who are informed, myself, John, Daryl, I mean, we knew that Joe Biden was suffering from cognitive issues for years, okay? But it seemed like the mainstream media had done an excellent job trying to hide it and keep it from so much of the public. And boy, this is talk about the emperor has no clothes moment. Finally getting to see the wizard and the Wizard of Oz, the whole bit. Was that unbelievable or what, that debate?
Well, it was. But as you said, for those of us paying close attention, it wasn't surprising. And my takeaways from it, in the days after is two questions. One is, do we all recognize how so many folks in the mainstream media clearly, unfortunately, have an agenda? Because this president has had these moments. This president has been sometimes literally physically lost or lost his bearings as to where he is, has lost his train of thought during discussions, has mumbled words. And look, I have a mom who's 85. Mm-hmm. On a human level, I'm empathetic, but my mom's not trying to be president of the United States. So the first takeaway is that what you and I and many of your listeners know is that this has been an issue. And the mainstream media worked in conjunction with the White House and the Biden administration to try and tell us, don't believe your lying eyes. And now, as you said, the emperor has no clothes. It was now clear to everyone. And the second takeaway is this is, yeah, that was a presidential debate. And we're getting ready to decide who's going to be president for the next 4 years. But I don't mean to be an alarmist, but as we sit here this Independence Day weekend, we got to remember that for the foreseeable future, for the next several months, Joe Biden's president of the United States. And we're supposed to put our heads on the pillow at night, believing the person who has been sworn to uphold an office to protect the United States of America, to protect our border, to protect our men and women around the world, is that person. And I got to tell you, politics aside, that's the other part that's crystal clear to me, is that the man who has been charged with doing this job is clearly not physically and perhaps not mentally up to doing the job. And I hope everybody gives that pause of the situation we're in right now that goes far beyond partisan politics.
Well, I know that I am, and I know that I'm concerned. And I think, one of the things, Guy, is we're still not getting the truth out of them. I mean, the Biden White House has tried to spin this in a number of different ways. I mean, before the debate was over, they came out and claimed the president had a cold, okay? But that didn't stop them from taking him out to a Waffle House, you know, after the debate in the midst of all these other people. And they hadn't told anyone about the supposed cold. And Karine Jean-Pierre, his press secretary, said on Friday that he wasn't on any medication. Then they tried to use the excuse and say, well, he was overprepared, you know. And then what leaks out, you're hearing that, you know, he when he first arrived at Camp David, he took 2 days off. Then when he went through his debate prep, they didn't start before 11 a.m. And then he took afternoon naps, all right, and it was still a disaster. So now they moved on to a new thing. Biden was quoted at a fundraiser on Tuesday night telling people that, no, what had happened was it was all this international travel that he had been. He said he'd been around the world twice, et cetera, et cetera. But that had been 12 days before the debate and before he spent at least seven, you know, resting up at Camp David. So, I mean, these they are spinning and throwing things out, hoping something will stick against the wall. And, I mean, it's obvious to all that that campaign is in free fall, and these folks are desperately, desperately seeking for a way out.
Oh, look, it's well put. And I mean, you went through the litany, which again, sometimes we have to do because the mainstream media doesn't always help us connect the dots or run through it. But again, I still would put, you know, let's go through the, you know, not to repeat your whole litany, mm-hmm. but just like your listeners, people, presidents get colds, presidents get the flu. Presidents have to work late at night, just like the folks listening to your call do. We have to prepare. Sometimes you have a big meeting, a big presentation, a big trial. Students have to prepare for final exams. I mean, and people do travel, and presidents travel, and presidents do have to go to events in Los Angeles or in Tacoma or in Orlando. Presidents of the United States do have to go to London and Paris and Sydney and Rome. That's part of the job. So I don't take any comfort. And again, I have no interest in piling on. I have no interest in piling, but I am a citizen. You know, I'm an American citizen long before I'm a Republican. And I'm an American citizen that says, telling me that he may have had a cold or took cold medicine or that he worked too hard or prepared too hard or had to travel, that doesn't matter to me. Because suppose the person in that room, suppose the person standing 5 feet away from him was not President Trump, but suppose it was Vladimir Putin, or suppose it was President Xi, or suppose it was Prime Minister Trudeau, or suppose it was Kim Il-sung. Do any of us believe that President Biden has the ability to look out for the best interest of the United States of America and our citizens right now? And that's something that needs to be put to the forefront. Not only does no one believe that he could effectively do the job in 2027 or 2028, I think it's now clear to a majority of Americans, it's not clear he's able to do the job right now. And I think the American public is due some real answers beyond political spin. Look, you and I have been around politics. You've run for office. Mm-hmm. You've been successful. We've all had bad days. We've all had bad debates. We've all had bad moments. This wasn't that. This has been what we've known for months and years, that he may not be physically and mentally up to the job. And the whole world watched, including our enemies. I think the White House owes the American public the truth on where things stand and who's handling things right now, because he's clearly not able to do the job fully.
Well, there's no doubt that the White House needs to apologize, and they owe the American people the truth. I mean, you have many on the right who've been asking, who's really running this country, okay? And, you know, I ask that because I want to know who to hold accountable for the inflation that's driven up prices in this country by over 20% for the last 3 years. I want to know who to hold accountable for the invasion at the southern border, where they're letting in people that are raping, murdering, and killing our children, you know, attacking our police officers. I want to know who to hold accountable for the disaster that's taking place in the Middle East and the complete bungling of the war in Ukraine, where today it's nothing more than a meat grinder that we've invested over $200 million in. So, you know, I think it's even more frightening to know that there's somebody behind the scenes that's unaccountable to all of us. We don't even know who this person is, but they're making these decisions and these decisions are not turning out well for the people of this country.
No, Sam, I think that is very, very well put. And I would add to the litany, the administration announced this week that they are releasing another million barrels of oil out of the strategic reserve because, again, they want to keep prices down through the July 4th holidays and into the summer when prices tend to go up. They're doing it for political reasons. At the same time, in the same news broadcast or in the same newspaper, or the same, you know, whatever, however you consume news, we're being told about different hurricanes and storms. You and I understand the strategic reserve is there, God forbid, in the event of war, but it's also there in the event that oil production in the Gulf Coast or elsewhere in the United States is shut down and the supply chain gets interrupted. And yet again, so add to the litany of things that Americans deserve to know that are vitally important, that have nothing to do with partisan politics. Add to it, who made the decision to release another million barrels of oil to the sole purpose of trying to keep prices down because they still think they're running a campaign over there and they don't want the American public to be angry as gasoline prices again creep into the 360s and the 370s and the 380s. It is the laundry list of things that again, are not about partisan politics, about real life. The border is a real thing. Inflation is a real thing. Energy is a real thing. And we deserve answers and we deserve accountability, as you so put it so well.
Yeah, to add to that guy, I'd like to know who's responsible for bypassing and going against the Supreme Court's ruling in regards to the student loans. You know, who's the one that's authorizing Biden or telling Biden it's okay to ignore the law and to take and just drive up debt by hundreds of billions of dollars even further in an attempt to pander and try to buy votes? You know, who's telling Biden that it's okay to take and conduct lawfare and go after your political opponent? I mean, these are the people that talk about defending democracy, and I believe democracy needs to be defended from them. Who are these folks?
Well, this has been again the last 2 weeks a lot of discussion about Supreme Court cases and rulings, and what we learned from too many on the left is when the Supreme Court does something they agree with, it's the Supreme Court and it's sacred. And when the Supreme Court does something they don't agree with, the Supreme Court is partisan and has to be replaced. The Supreme Court not once but twice has told the Biden administration and told the president directly that he does not have any authority whatsoever to arbitrarily pick up to $1 trillion in student loan debt and just write it off. Because, see, the United States government can't write it off. When they say they forgive it or that it's canceled, that means that everybody listening to this broadcast just became the co-signers on those loans, on those debts that others took, whether you went to college or not, whether you paid off your debt or not, because it doesn't go away. There's currently an IOU sitting in our bank account, the nation's treasury, for those student loans to be repaid. When the president says to various groups, don't worry, you don't have to pay, and why? Because I said so. Well, that money's missing. So we're going to pay it back. And so it's not only that he's doing something that it's not only economically foolish, it's illegal, and it's harmful to the rest of us. So again, add it to the list of who's making these decisions, who decided that the Supreme Court is to be ignored. And for the folks that chant about democracy and saving America, I'm not really sure how defying the President of the United States openly defying the Supreme Court on what is clearly just vote buying. I mean, at its core, this isn't an issue of vital national security or American, rule of law. I mean, this is vote buying. That's all this is. And the gamesmanship should be frightening to all of us. Frankly, even if you're one of the 13% of Americans who's having their loans forgiven, this is a dangerous precedent for presidents to pick winners and losers and add debt to the Treasury unilaterally. We don't have a monarchy. We have a constitutional republic. And again, whether it was Joe Biden or Joe Biden being persuaded to do these things or other people acting in his name, what they're doing is economically wrong and a clear violation of the law. And we're all going to pay for it.
Well, you know, you're talking about this money up to $1 trillion that he's spending on the student loans. And you're absolutely right, but it's not just us that are going to pay for it, but it's our children and grandchildren, because this is being put on top of the other debt. And, you know, when I look at these things, and we have some serious problems in this country, and they're wasting money on this because it's not reforming higher education. It's not changing or altering the cost of higher education. It's just taking and appealing to a group of folks today and saying, basically, hey, I'll give you money by taking and placing it on the backs of someone else to repay, you know? And I mean, I think there are arguments to be made about the need to reform higher education so that the cost of education is affordable. But what he's doing does nothing for the folks who have already gone to school and paid off their student loans, or the folks that will be going to school next year or the year after that. And we've seen that government does nothing more than distort the markets. You know, when they come in with any type of subsidies and things of that nature, you've seen it with Pell Grants. You know, you can almost, you know, check your watch when you look at the amount of the government subsidies and then the tuition increases. It's really just higher education just absorbs these. So it hasn't done anything to address that. I get angry at all the money dumped into green energy projects. Okay, when we know with nuclear, you know, you have a stable, reliable, carbon-free source of energy, you know, and the money that he's dumping into subsidies for green energy, how about we spend some of that on the mental health crisis that we have in this country? I mean, there are so many different things, and the what angers me is, you know, I got into politics, and I know that you were leading on this issue, but we're about trying to actually solve problems. You want to make life better for people. Too many of these folks, such as Biden and the Democrats today, are just navigating from one issue to another issue, not looking to solve anything, but to leverage the issue to be able to remain in office. And that's wrong.
It is wrong. And in many cases, and I would say, you know, go back to your points on student loans that were very well made. I would argue that they're making it worse, because as you alluded to, when the government comes in and subsidizes something, they've created the new floor. If everybody wants to go to college in America, automatically, regardless of income, regardless of your major, is entitled to $7,000. Well, guess what? The opening bid on tuition is $7,000.
Exactly.
Because they've now created that. And what they've done with this student loan is, to your point, the problem that we as a society face with these student loans is that college education has been growing in its price faster than inflation almost as long as I've been alive.
Mm-hmm.
They've been treating it, you know, we used to joke about it, they treat it like monopoly money. Well, the problem is it isn't monopoly money, it's real money. So if, you know, whether you're dealing with Pitt or Carnegie Mellon there, or you're dealing with Penn or Villanova on the other side of the state, no one in the president's office of those universities, nobody in the treasurer's office, nobody in the bursar's office can see what happens when Biden does this and have any motivation to try and control costs or bring them down, because what these kids will just take loans. And if the loans get too big, the government will just forgive them. Well, that system is broken, and that system has now landed in the laps of the 87% of Americans, the 87% of Americans who don't have student loans. It's just been dropped in our lap. And the folks making the decisions at the cost of education, the cost of higher education, have absolutely no incentive to reduce it or slow its growth or bring any sanity to it, because the government essentially said, we're going to underwrite it with fake money. And when the debt gets too big, we'll just transfer it to the general public. They've essentially, dare I say, something you and I have talked about in the past, is, dare I say, Bernie Sanders won again. Bernie Sanders wanted free college. Everybody should have free college, and you and I know there's no such thing.
Right.
But when you send people to school and charge them tens of thousands of dollars, make them pay through loans, and then tell them they don't have to pay the loans back, that's not free college for us as taxpayers, but you've created sort of this fake free college for thousands and tens of thousands of students. It's a dangerous precedent, because teachers cost money, books cost money, classrooms cost money, research costs money, and to pretend it doesn't cost money is ridiculous. So again, the White House is out of control. And look, no politician of, you know, Republicans do bad things, Democrats do things. I understand that. But this is a case of absolutely obvious vote buying, and we're all being stuck with the tab. This is to me, this is far worse than sort of a local politician that hires their nephew for a trash contract. Like, that's bad enough. This is $1 trillion being passed along to all of us that, as you point out, not only us, but our children and grandchildren are going to be saddled with artificially higher taxes for generations to try and pay this back, because the money's needed. It's an IOU, and you just can't write it off.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, again, it's just another attempt, you know, at pandering for votes here at the expense of everybody that's going to be left. And you know what? I started looking at some of these things in retrospect, Guy. And, you know, when we look at Biden's diminished capacity here, I think he's suffering from the same thing in 2020, you know, but because of the pandemic, they were able to run the basement strategy. And I think they've had two other things that they've done here that have caused problems for America. One, they were able to take and elect him back in 2020 again, much due to the result of the pandemic. But right after electing him, they took in, I believe it was unneeded, but they passed a bill called the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021, where they injected $1.9 trillion into the economy here by sending all this to government, you know, agencies as well as others across the country. Now, we benefited in, you know, many municipalities, cities, states, you know, they were able to benefit it because they were able to take and use it to spend on a lot of items there. But I think the whole idea behind that plan was to throw so much money out there that people were going to be sitting fat, dumb, and happy. And it was a bold-faced attempt to try to seal his reelection, you know, in 2024. And, you know, you couple that with the lawfare strategy that they're pursuing. And I mean, it's like, it wasn't enough just for them to fool us once, but they were intent on fooling us twice. And fortunately for us, the debate laid those plans bare the other night.
Well, and the, you point to sort of the match or the kerosene, you know, the match that lit the fuse or the kerosene poured on the fire. That today, the part of the reason that we're paying $3.70 for a gallon of gasoline, part of the reason that your grocery bills and my grocery bills are up 20-30% or more, you know, the ground beef is so much more expensive. Part of the reason began with what you said, which is the multi-billion dollar spending when he took office. When, in fact, we were coming out of the lockdowns, people were surviving. Thankfully, the death tolls were nothing near what we were told to fear. The vaccine was available for those who needed it. So we didn't need that, you know, unbelievable spending. All it did, as you said, was an attempt to appease people and give them goodies. You know, it was like shoving kids in a room and handing them bowls and bowls of candy. And then all of a sudden, now the cavities have hit. And for us, the cavities are inflation, and it's higher grocery bills, higher energy bills, higher gasoline prices. And it was caused because of that wild spending. And that was the problem. And so it begins there. And we're still paying the price for it. And as you know, that wasn't enough, because they came back less than a year later with the so-called Green Inflation Reduction Act. You know, having caused inflation with billions and trillions of dollars of spending, obviously the cure to fixing it is to dump even more money in the economy. And as you rightfully pointed out, they not only just dumped it in the economy, then they put it into so-called green energy. And the so-called green energy, as we learned, isn't so much about really cleaning the air or giving us energy independence. It's about chasing after these things that we know will fail and can't replace fossil fuels. There is no discussion. There's not one penny. There is not one penny in the Inflation Reduction Act, which is really the Green New Deal, for what you talked about, nuclear research or nuclear energy. Because if we were serious about it, if we were serious about cleaning our air and using different energy sources, one, the United States would be doing everything it could to get Pennsylvania natural gas out of the ground. And the second thing is we would go about the business of building nuclear
plan. Meanwhile, we're not doing those things. We're trying to slow fossil fuel production, and there's no discussion. And in fact, you know, we live in a state that used to have more nuclear power plants than any other state, and we closed one down because of government regulation. So, look, you know, again, back to the point you made, well, you and I are in the business of trying to identify problems that impact our neighbors and our nation and fix them. They don't seem concerned about that.
Yep. And Guy, I want to talk more about that after the break here. We have to take a break to pay the bills. Here, this is the Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. We'll be right back with Guy Shiraki. Welcome back to the Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. We're joined on the phone here with Guy Shiraki, senior fellow with the Commonwealth Foundation. In the first segment, we were just talking about the fallout from the debates, and we're talking about some of the drivers behind the inflation that we've seen here. And Guy was just talking about nuclear energy, because that seems to be one of the things missing from the environmentalist plan and from the Inflation Reduction Act, which was really a misnomer, was misnamed, because it was essentially the Green New Deal that Biden was pushing, and it's just taken and helped like put gas on the fire of the inflation that has ravaged this country since Biden took office back in January of 2021. So, Kai, you were talking about nuclear energy there.
Yeah, well, I mean, the point is this, that if we were serious, if the real issue was cleaner energy, we would focus more on Pennsylvania's natural gas and the natural gas that is underneath West Virginia and Ohio, which the Pennsylvania alone, you know, I've shared with your listeners before, but, you know, I keep trying to drive the point home to, you know, for us to all go forth and share the news. I mean, Pennsylvania's natural gas, we have more energy under our feet than Saudi Arabia does. Mm-hmm. And Saudi Arabia gets to control the world's market or be a leader in controlling oil prices, which ultimately is what you and I pay to buy gasoline. In reality, in the world of natural gas, Pennsylvania is bigger than Saudi Arabia. But too many politicians try to either stop or slow the production or tell us it ought to go out of business. You know, if you or I were in the natural gas business, if we were a natural gas producing company, and the president of the United States and members of his party kept saying, well, we got to put you out of business. What you're doing is harmful. What you're doing is harmful. Well, you'd be far less likely to invest money and look for new locations to drill and buy modern equipment to do it. And no doubt that the rhetoric and the regulations and the slow processing of permits has harmed our ability to produce. So one, if we were really serious about cleaner air, we would use more natural gas, and it's sitting under our feet. And by the way, we create tons and tons of high five-figure and six-figure jobs. The second is the point you made, which is the nuclear, which is, again, if we were really just trying to produce energy that had low emissions, to complement natural gas, it would be nuclear. And the New Deal, the Green New Deal, which was, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars, there's not one penny, there's not one nickel to build a facility or study the building of a facility or to do anything to increase energy production. So, you know, again, go back to your point. We got into politics to solve problems. Energy, the reliability, the amount of energy, the dependency, you know, who's producing the energy, us or our enemies, these are all things. But, you know, Sam, to go back to the beginning when we first started, mm-hmm. This is the debate that as Americans we should be having. This is the debate that Donald Trump and Joe Biden should be having. They should be having a debate about the merits of natural gas. They should be having the debates about the merits of nuclear energy. But unfortunately, one of the participants, namely the sitting president of the United States, Joe Biden, is not capable of doing that. He's not capable of engaging in. Look, they could do a full hour or more. They could do a full debate just on energy, mm-hmm. and the debate of energy and environment and the idea that it's a false choice. The idea that we can be, you know, should we be energy independent or clean the air? The reality is we can do both. But these are all the things that we can't have. They can't have a serious discussion about the border because President Biden's not up to it. We can't have a serious discussion about government spending because President Biden's not up to it. Can't have a serious discussion about America's role in the war in Ukraine or the war in Israel and Gaza because President Biden's not up to it. And the American public are being shortchanged and we're being fed information from the White House that, as I say, they continue to tell us, you know, don't believe your lying eyes or don't believe your lying ears. And there are some serious problems and some serious issues. I think that our party has some good answers to these problems, but we don't get the ability to debate them because the president is not able, President Biden is not able to debate these issues. And instead, as you said, sort of these nameless, faceless people behind the scenes are pulling the levers, and in some cases, you know, doing things we're not even sure the president is aware of are happening.
Well, and it's not just the fact that he's incapable of doing it. It's the fact that the media here, the Fourth Estate, the folks that are supposed to speak truth to power and hold power accountable, refuse to do their jobs and demand that we have a debate on these issues, the issues that affect, you know, the American people here. And yeah, I've just, it's just, it's I'm flabbergasted at the failure of these folks to talk about these things. Back when I was a kid growing up, we had two newspapers here. You had the Post-Gazette, which was delivered in the morning. You had the Pittsburgh Press that came in the afternoon. But I vividly remember reading the newspaper when I was a kid, and there would be like full-fledged articles on particular policies. And then there'd be an analysis as to how that policy would affect the average family, you know, what it would mean to your pocketbook, what it would mean to the debt, what it would mean for all these things. Here, you have trillion-dollar bills being passed, and there's none of that. And so, you know, I mean, really, negligence from the Fourth Estate.
Well, yeah, and you know, on the opposite side of the state, there was a point where Philadelphia had four newspapers, but most of my life, there were three, but to your point, there was the Inquirer and the Daily News were the morning papers and the Evening Bulletin. The Bulletin was the evening paper. And first of all, in those newspapers, there were differing opinions. In fact, some would go so far as to pick an issue and invite thoughtful people on two sides of an issue and invite men and women thinking about, to write about the war in Vietnam, to write about how to deal with the Soviet Union. There was give and take. And to a certain extent, the newspapers held each other accountable. Whereas today, again, not data from you or me or not data from any Republican or conservative organization, but reporters, by their own admission, by every study done by places like Pew, 90 to 99% of reporters are Democrats. And look, here's how bad the Fourth Estate is in the city of Philadelphia. Many of your listeners may know, but many may not. In the days following the debate, a number of columnists and left, you know, liberal columnists, progressive columnists wrote the president should consider standing down. Some newspapers, their official editorial was President Biden should not seek re-election. Here's how bad the Philadelphia Inquirer is. The Philadelphia Inquirer was the first one. Their editorial, you know what their editorial was yesterday? Their editorial was President Donald Trump is unfit to run for office and he should do the nation a service and withdraw his candidacy. So do you think the Philadelphia Inquirer's editorial board and their reporters are doing any of the fair and balanced investigative journalism or the things we talked about? Do you think the Philadelphia Inquirer is doing any thoughtful discussion about Pennsylvania natural gas or nuclear energy? Any thoughtful discussion about the border? Any thoughtful discussion about the Middle East? A newspaper that in the backdrop of the debate decided, we're going to steal the show. Everybody wants to talk about Biden. We're going to do that. So, look, it's no longer, you know, the reason that you're successful and you and others in talk radio and so many podcasts and different things have come forward is because the press that you and I grew up with, that we didn't always agree with, but we felt as though they were covering the news. Unfortunately, that era has passed. It's now advocacy journalism, you know, or it's advocacy passing as journalism because, in essence, I mean, KJP might as well be on the editorial board of the Philadelphia Inquirer. There's not much difference in what's coming out. The gone are the days of debate and discussion.
No, absolutely. And I don't know how, you know, we change that or turn that around. But, you know, we definitely need to get back to the point where we're informing, you know, the people in the electorate. We complain about how folks vote, you know, in their failure to make the connection. Like, for example, you know, one of the big things that the left is hot on and we are should be paying attention to is affordable housing. Okay. But the reason then voting for folks on the left who have espoused and supported these policies and voted for them, which have set inflation soaring and caused our mortgage rates to more than double, or what are behind now making affordable housing even unaffordable for even the middle class. I saw something the other day that said you have to make in excess of $106,000 a year to be able to afford a home based upon today's current mortgage rates, okay? We desperately need somebody, you know, to be able to take and tell that story and carry it to the consumers so that they're informed and can make better choices at the ballot box. That's not being done today. And I don't know how or how we can change it.
Yeah, and I think the way, I don't think that we change it in the sense that suddenly the Philadelphia Inquirer or the Post-Gazette or the New York Times are suddenly going to become balanced. They haven't. They've been bought by people. You know, back in the day, like with a lot of things, you'd say, you know, don't they realize, you know, there was a book written years ago, you know, Republicans buy sneakers too. But, you know, there was a time where you would do things in a way in journalism because you felt an obligation to tell the news. You presented multiple opinions on the opinion page because that's what the opinion page was for. But now it's viewed as advocacy journalism. And frankly, you know, I don't even mean this to sound as confrontational as it does, but the folks that own the Philadelphia Inquirer, they don't really care if I read it or not, because they're not really interested in my business, because they're not really advertising to me. They've accepted that they're going to talk to a smaller segment of the market, and they've built their business model there. So the way we combat it is, one, we talk about it, because information is how we, you know, should make informed decisions. But two is, again, I think the reason that more and more folks like you have jumped into the arena of radio broadcast and podcast, the more that things like Broad and Liberty that I write for have come into existence, is because people are asking for other perspectives. People are looking for news stories that aren't being covered. So they're looking to these things. So the answer is not so much, you know, unless you or I find out there's some natural gas underneath our homes and somebody will pay us millions of dollars for it, you or I can't buy the Post-Gazette of the Inquirer and try and fix it. So the alternative is to do exactly what you're doing. It's radio, it's independent radio, it's podcast, it's promoting these things on different platforms, it's Broad and Liberty, it's Real Clear Pennsylvania, it's all these different other things where we can share information to an audience of people that is looking for information in different places. One, because they're enjoying exploring, but two is, I think most Americans recognize that the major city newspapers is essentially a print version or a digital version of MSNBC. And if you're interested in hearing that, I mean, if you want to be told that Donald Trump is a horrible person, that Republicans are mean, that the planet is going to melt, and that if you don't get your 19th COVID vaccine booster, you're going to die, then pick up a copy of the Philadelphia Inquirer, because you'll read countless articles. And Sam, more to the point, you'll read columns about that stuff in the sports section. You'll read columns about that stuff in the food section, because I kid you not, if this was a television, you know, when you have your television programming, you invite me on, but you know, like in the old days, you know, with David Letterman or different talk show hosts, I would hold up the headline. There were stories in the Philadelphia Inquirer this spring. How will pitchers hold up given the climate change? How will baseball change when pitchers aren't able to pitch longer and deeper into games because the weather will be so bad and the humidity will be so high that pitchers won't be able to pitch? Now, some of us are old school, wonder how baseball survived with starting pitchers only pitching 5 or 6 innings. But the Inquirer was actually suggesting, right? The Inquirer is suggesting the pitchers might only be able to pitch an inning or two because the weather's going to be so oppressive. I mean, this is the madness that is now seeped into the sports pages. So, look, no one picks up the Inquirer because they want to hear a thoughtful discussion. So the answer is more information, more outlets, more radio hosts, more podcasts, more opinion journals. And we flood the marketplace of ideas with more ideas because we believe if our ideas get the light of day, that we're going to win more often than not.
I think that's a great point, Guy. And I'll tell you, inspiration for us to continue in our mission to be able to bring voices like yourselves, you know, to our listeners out there of the airwaves, because they desperately need to have access to this information. Now, speaking about access to information and getting accurate information, in addition to the debacle that the president had, Democrats are scrambling not just to determine whether he should stay in or get out. We can talk about that in a minute. But also, I think the narrative is changing. Democrats are now looking to run against the Supreme Court. You know, they're painting some of these recent decisions as being a Donald Trump controlled court and getting the decisions that he wants and a far right court. You know, they want to talk about restoring balance. And you and I both know, as we talk, we'll talk about a few of these decisions, that it is nothing of the sort. You know, and
because I mean, to the bigger picture, you step back and say, look, there are unfortunately, you know, and when I say the Democrats, I always say to folks, like, I don't mean your next door neighbor. I don't mean your folks you work with, or even necessarily your local township supervisor. But I mean, the Democratic Party as a brand, the Democratic Party is a machine, and the people who are driving the ideas in the Democratic Party, they are so cult-like, hell-bent on their ideology that things like the Constitution don't matter. The rule of law don't matter, right? We talked about the president doing what he did on student loans, notwithstanding the Supreme Court telling him he can't. And so why do you see folks like AOC or Elizabeth Warren talk about the delegitimacy of the Supreme Court? Because that's what they want to do. They want to tear it down as an institution. Why? Because it didn't do the right thing. And if they can't shame them into that, they'll threaten them. And if they can't get them to change their behavior through threats, then they talk about packing it and adding new members. Right. So, again, go back to sort of baseball. You know, you don't like the umpire behind home plate. So you call time and you complaining and say, I'm not going to listen to whether the umpire calls balls and strikes anymore. And the other team says, we can't do that. We need the umpire. So, okay, well, then I'm going to bring five other umpires in here and they agree with our strike zone. So we're not going to listen to that umpire. We're going to listen to the five brand new umpires. They're going to stand by home plate because they like our strike zone the way it should be. See, that's what they do. And that's what they're doing here. I mean, that is exactly to your point. They're running against it. They're delegitimizing it because if the Supreme Court isn't owned, if you don't give it any respect or deference, then you don't have to listen to it. And if they can't do that, they talk about packing it, which means we put in a bunch of political operatives to be Supreme Court judges. We take political operatives, political activists, put a black robe on them, send them behind a walnut desk, and then say, oh, well, see, they said it. That's not the way it is. And all these decisions were simply, the majority of the Supreme Court simply saying, this is what the Constitution says. We're going to uphold the Constitution. And by the way, if you don't agree, then change the Constitution or change the laws, because we're going to rule on what things actually say. It's not our job to wish what we would like the laws were. We didn't run for Congress. If you don't like what we're doing, go to Congress and change the laws or change the Constitution. I think it's a refreshing approach. And frankly, whether your views are left of center or right of center, I think it brings a sense of stability and reliability when you expect a court to actually follow the law as written. If you don't like the law, go change it. But otherwise, again, like in the baseball game, you expect to know what the strike zone is. You expect the Supreme Court to rule on the balls and strikes and not have a bias. The Supreme Court over the last 2 weeks has ruled on the balls and strikes. They said, this is what the Constitution says, and laid out a very thoughtful analysis. And I think everybody at the end of the day should take a deep breath, whether you like the opinion or not, and say, that they did their job.
Well, and I couldn't agree more, but the left is up in arms, you know, in regards to the Chevron decision, which was nothing more than the Supreme Court saying that, hey, if you want to pass regulations, then Congress needs to pass those. Unelected bureaucrats can't take and do these things, particularly when they harm folks, and it gives the average citizen the ability to challenge that in court. That's all that was, you know?
It was pretty straightforward, right? Over the years, I've written I don't know, hundreds of columns. There have been two columns that have evoked real passion that you can sense, you can see it. Look, go to my LinkedIn profile. You can see the passion on LinkedIn. You know you've struck a nerve when people are yelling at you on LinkedIn, of all places, right? But look, I wrote a column about the First Amendment a little over a year ago, and that brought, you know, hundreds of responses. This one I wrote on the courts did, and to the Chevron case, again, get all the legalese aside, you know, as I say, I'm a recovering lawyer, graduated from Villanova and was a deputy prosecutor, deputy attorney general early in my days. But let's take all the legalese out. Really simple. In 1984, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that when Chevron was actually challenging a federal regulation and said it was unfair, it was too burdensome, the Supreme Court at that time in 1984 said,
we have to give great deference to these agencies because they have experts. And if they think this is the way the law should be, we should give them the benefit of the doubt. So they set out what you said, Sam, the Chevron standard. Mm-hmm. And in plain English, the Chevron standard was agencies know best, and we're going to give them great deference. And if they say that this should be the regulation to manage coal plants, auto mechanics, or mushroom farmers, that was it. It was gospel. Last week, the U.S. Supreme Court said Chevron was wrong. That decision was wrong. Bureaucrats working at the EPA, the Department of Labor, the Securities and Exchange Commission are no more expert than the plaintiff or the defendant. And so they don't presume that the regulation is wrong. They don't presume that it's right. Come to court and let both parties make their argument. Let the farmer come in and explain why the Department of Agriculture regulation is unreasonable. Let the Department of Agriculture come in and explain why they did the regulation. And if Congress doesn't like it, Congress could legislate. What a novel idea. As I wrote in my column, we've now had 40 years of fluffy language and virtue signaling with throwaway language that says details to follow. So we've tried it for 40 years of details to follow. And details to follow has meant the IRS and the EPA, regulators, people you and I don't know who they are, they got to tell businesses how to run their business and tell farmers how to farm and to tell companies how to run and to tell individuals how to file their taxes. And the reaction of social media has been explosive. Oh my God, you're getting rid of experts. These people are skilled. They know what do members of Congress know? So, Sam, so our friends on the other side have shown who they are. They now believe that nameless, faceless bureaucrats and not the men and women we elect to Congress should make decisions. This sounds a lot like the crowd in 2020 that said we should all just stay home because Dr. Fauci said so. We should all just lock down our schools because the bureaucrats said so. We should all determine that there are certain jobs that are of vital national interest and other jobs not. Now, we don't live in an oligarchy. We don't live in a monarchy. All the Supreme Court said was, if you feel so strongly about an idea, a rule, then pass it and have the president sign it. If not, it's not the law. That's how we do things here. It's pretty straightforward. I would think at the end of the day, everybody would applaud that, because if your views are left of center, you don't want a right-wing bureaucrat at the Justice Department issuing a regulation. And if you're an everyday citizen that really doesn't have political bias, you just want to know that the rules are fair. And if you don't like the rules are fair, you want to be able to go to your elected officials and have them change. This was a great reset. It's in favor of legislation and accountability in government. Anybody opposed to it isn't really thinking of the best interests of the country. They're trying to advance a political ideology.
Well, thank you for explaining that to our listeners. I know they appreciate it. You know, one of the big things here is that this gave members of Congress an excuse. You know, they were able to allow things to be done and put in place that hurt, you know, their constituents, but yet they faced no accountability at the ballot box because it wasn't them, wasn't a vote that they took. Now, Guy, we only have 3 minutes left. I'd like you to talk about the decision on immunity. That was one of the things that we were talking about, because they seem to really have gone off the rails on that. I heard someone say on radio here in Pittsburgh the other day that this meant that Trump could kill 70 million people. You know, and he would be immune from it. I mean, they are completely off the rails. So do you want to explain that for the folks?
Sure. So the idea was, is a president immune from being charged with criminal or civil penalties for something he does or, you know, she does someday? I listened to a professor from Georgetown, and I don't typically quote professors from Georgetown, but anyway, he explained it this way. When we all went to bed on Sunday night, presidents were immune from being charged criminally with doing anything in their job. And folks, when we went to bed Monday night, we went to bed in a country where the president could not be charged criminally for doing his job. Nothing changed. The U.S. Supreme Court simply set a standard. When you're doing your job as president, you could be charged. When you're not doing your job as president, you don't have immunity. And if there's a gray area, we're going to go to court and discuss it and debate it. You know, again, I say to folks, when President Obama sent drones to kill terrorists, and in the course of action, some of the terrorists he needed to go after were, in fact, American citizens, he wasn't brought up in murder charges in the home state of where those American terrorists lived. We wouldn't want to live in a nation where he was done that, where that was done. At the same time, if, going home at night, the president hangs out of the limousine with a baseball bat and whacks all the mailboxes over, and can't say, well, I have immunity, I'm allowed to bust mailbox. That's all the Supreme Court said. There are three instances. If you're doing your job, you can't be charged. If you're not doing your job, you can be charged. And if there's any debate, we'll go to court. That's what we want. We don't want our presidents holding the court. And any suggestion otherwise is just an attempt to inflame people. Hey, folks, a president should be able to do his job. And there is a backstop. There isn't the impeachment clause. And when not used, that's our backdrop, our elected officials. In the end, Sam, these decisions come back to this. We're upholding the Constitution. We're putting legislators in charge of legislation, and citizens can hold their elected officials accountable. These are good rulings for everyone, regardless of what party you belong to.
Folks, you heard it here. You heard it from Guy Ciarocchi. Guy, thank you so much for joining us this week on The Elephant in the Room. As always, when we get rolling, man, time just flies, you know? So we hope to have you back again, if you're willing.
Sure, and thanks for the opportunity, and thanks for all the good work you're doing, not only for the party, but as elected official and being somebody that is looking out for citizens and being transparent in what he's doing. So I appreciate that and follow you from afar as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Guy. And folks, until next week, this is Sam DeMarco for The Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. Look forward to talking to you next week. Have a great weekend.